This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's going on?
You know, just going through some best players on a championship team. So this is part two of our episode. We looked at the years from 1946 to 1974 in part one. We're going to get cracking on part two as well. What do you think so far, Rich?
Yeah, I think it was a pretty fun experiment. I know when we first had this idea of doing the show, I kind of figured that it would be pretty easy. You know, that we would be able to do this in one tight, needy episode and just kind of say, you know what? Yeah, it's like, you know, these few years are up for debate. You know, 2004 Pistons are up for debate and this year. But like, I couldn't believe how many were up for legitimate debates when you went and looked at them, because you kind of always think, you know, there's always at least one, you know, every championship team seems to have one dominant star or one guy that's like, you know, head and shoulders above the other, or like a couple dominant stars. But it's very clear that this one person was like emerged, you know, as the top guy for that year. But like, it was pretty spread out when we were doing this. And there was a lot of years that I was really like, oh, wow, we're going to actually have like a real discussion about some of these guys. So that made it a lot of fun. And yeah, I think the same thing is going to happen with this part two. Again, I didn't even think we were going to get a part two. I think part two is going to have many, many, many fun debates with a lot of, you know, modern teams where you could really make a case for a few guys. And especially so because for most of these, you know, you and I both watch these in real time. So we can maybe give a little bit more of our actual thoughts of, hey, when we were watching it, it felt like X was, you know, the best player on this team, or that Y was the reason why this team won. You know, a little tougher to do that, you know, in the 50s when I wasn't watching the games. And I don't believe you were either, Jason. But
Not that old.
You're old, but you're not that old. Yeah. I don't think you're that much older than me, right? Like, I don't know why I would say that. That's so mean. I apologize. But
it really was. It's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I really apologize for that. No, I'm just kidding. Right. But the more recent ones, we've seen these in real time. So I think that'll make for fun debates as well. And most of our listeners have seen these as well. So this might, you know, I think part one, a lot of people are like, yeah, you guys made some good picks. So yeah, they're pretty solid. I think part two might get some like, hey, you guys are absolutely wrong. It's definitely this guy, which will be fun. I like that.
Terrible. We love to be yelled at.
So yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Fun yelled at. Constructively yelled at. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Not mean yelled at. Not called names.
That makes me sad, like, and depressed.
Right. So it does make me sad and depressed. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to recap who we've selected so far. So these are, of course, ones that we discussed and came to conclusions to in the prior episode, plus ones that off the top we realized, yeah, there's no reason to debate these. So I will go through the list. We begin with George the Blind Bomber Glamick, 1946 Royals. So the Blind Bomber made his way into our hearts. It was a wonderful time for all of us. Joe Foulkes, 1947 Warriors. Buddy Jeanette, the 1948 original Baltimore Bullets. Frankie Bryan, 1949, Anderson Packers, the last year of the NBL. Arnie Risen, 1951, Royals. George Mikan from 1947 to 1950 and 52 to 54, most of those with the Minneapolis Lakers. Dolph Shays, 1955, Nationals, now the 76ers. Paul Arison, 1956, Warriors. Bob Cousy, 1957, Celtics, might get some controversy over that pick. Bob Pettit, 1958, less likely to instigate controversy. Bill Russell, 1959 to 1966, all eight championships in a row for the Celtics. Wilt Chamberlain in 67 and 72. Connie Hawkins, 1968 for the Pittsburgh Pipers. John Havlicek, three times for the Celtics in 68, 69, and 74. Might be a little bit of a surprise there. Warren Jabali for the 1969 Oakland Oaks. Roger Brown for the 1970 Pacers. Willis Reed for the 1970 Knicks. Zelmo Beatty for the 1971 Utah Stars. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the 1971 Bucks. Mel Daniels for the 1972 Pacers. Walt Frazier for the 73 Knicks. George McGinnis for the 73 Pacers, making the Pacers three players for three different years for their dynasty. Interesting things. Julius Erving, 74 and 76 Nets. Artis Gilmore for the 75 Kentucky Colonels. Rick Barry for the 75 Warriors. Dave Cowens for the 76 Celtics. Bill Walton for the 77 Blazers. Magic Johnson, 82, 87, and 88 Lakers. Larry Bird for the 84 and 86 Celtics. Michael Jordan for all the Bulls dynasty years. Hakeem Olajuwon for the 94 and 95 Rockets. Shaquille O'Neal for the 2000 and 2002 Lakers. 2001 we're going to talk about here. Tim Duncan for the 03 Spurs, and we're going to talk about the other Spurs years. Dwayne Wade for the 06 Heat, Dirk Nowitzki for the 2011 Mavericks, LeBron James 2012, 2013, and 2016, Steph Curry for the 2015 and 2022 Warriors, who just won the championship. The other years we will discuss. Kawhi Leonard for the 2019 Raptors, and Giannis Antetokounmpo for the 2021 Bucks. And woo, that's a lot of names.
Yeah, that was, man, congratulations. I was wondering if you feel like you wanted me to take over at some point, or you needed a breath, or you're gonna pass out, or yeah, just you gotta take a breather for a minute.
All right, all right.
Get yourself
thank
back.
You.
Yeah, you know, okay. But that was good. Woo! Congratulations. Right. Yeah, that was a lot of names and a lot of years. And a lot of dudes.
Guys.
Yeah, a lot of guys. I will probably in the show post, if you check this out at Fansided, we'll probably, because we have like a spreadsheet and stuff, and we can include a full list of this as well, if it's easier to read this as opposed to just hearing
it
us
might
talk
be.
About it.
We'll no, I expect yeah. all of our listeners to commit this to memory. They should know who we
right.
picked, you know.
Pop yeah. quiz, who was 1971?
Right. Exactly.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, no, Zelma Beatty also, you idiot.
Like, yeah, you idiot. People. How could you forget
Zelma?
Dummy,
the ABA.
Bastards. Yeah, what the hell.
48. Buddy Jeanette. If you don't know, if you don't say Buddy Jeanette within 15 seconds, like, what are you even doing? You know what I mean?
All right.
So,
yeah.
What kind of fan are you? Fake fans. All the whole
fake
lot of you.
Fans. Yes.
The whole lot of you.
No respect for the Baltimore Bullets. The original Bullets.
Yeah, the original. Not that Baltimore Bullets, but kind of that Baltimore Bullets, but not really that Baltimore Bullets. Anyway.
Sure.
Yes.
Right. Anyway. All right. We're
speaking
here.
Of yeah. the actual Baltimore oh. Bullets, the one that you remember.
Yeah.
That was good. I didn't even mean to do that.
Yeah.
1978. Let's start with them. Let's make some cases here, the Washington Bullets at this time, but anyway,
right.
You know, I had to do the transition, and then I could tell you that they're not the Baltimore Bullets anymore, they're the Washington Bullets, but they were the Baltimore Bullets, but now they're the Washington Bullets, and this is in 1978, and they won the title, and now we have cases for, I believe, two guys strongly, and maybe a third. Wes Unseld, Elvin Hayes are my definite ones, and Bob Dandridge might make an interesting case here. We'll get to him in a second.
Sure.
So who was the best player for the 44-win NBA champion Washington Bullets? Yeah, very weird here
yeah.
where
yeah.
a 44-win team. I just would love to see, obviously in a full season, not like a lockout season or a COVID season or whatever, a 44-win team go and make it to the NBA Finals. Like, what would that be? Like, who was a 44-win team in last year's NBA? I'm trying to think of who was.
Like the Hawks, basically. Yeah.
Right. Like, that would be so weird where you're like, oh, yeah the Hawks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, they, you know.
Sure.
Jared Allen is the best player on the 44-win right. Cleveland Cavaliers champion. That would actually rock.
Yeah.
That should happen again. But it's shockingly close here. Regular season-wise, Elvin Hayes scored 19.7 points per game over 81 games. He also grabbed 13.3 rebounds per game. Not bad. Bob Dandridge had similar scoring numbers, 19.3, so slightly below Elvin Hayes. An otherwise well-rounded season for Bob Dandridge. Wes Unseld, though, I mean, obviously his scoring was low, as it kind of usually was, at 7.6 points per game. But he did have 11.9 rebounds per game. Now, win shares-wise, Elvin Hayes is the clear pick. He was at 8.3 win shares. If we're just going by that, he would be your pick. But Bob Dandridge follows at 6.8. And Unseld, despite the low scoring numbers, because he was a good defender and because he was able to do so many other things, he ties Dandridge at 6.8 in the regular season. Now, the playoffs follow a very similar path with Elvin Hayes at 21.8 points per game, 13.3 rebounds per game. Dandridge right behind him at 21.2 points per game. Unseld, solid as always, at 9.4 points per game and 12 rebounds per game. Now, to me, the answer is clearly Hayes. But I do think there is some interesting stuff here. Advanced numbers backed it up as well. He jumped up to 3.1 win shares in the playoffs. Unseld was the next closest at 2.0. Hayes played great throughout the playoffs, including a finals average of 20.7 points per game, 11.9 rebounds per game over the 7-game series. But, just one more wrinkle to this, in Game 7, Elvin Hayes was not that good. He was good. He wasn't great. He only had 12 points and 8 rebounds. He battled foul trouble throughout, and I think he fouled out of that game.
Yeah.
Wes Unseld, though, stepped up big. He had 15 points and 9 rebounds, and Bob Dandridge had 19 points. With that said, I'm still going to give it to Elvin Hayes. I think the regular season numbers were too good. The postseason numbers were too good. Wes Unseld is right there, and Wes Unseld obviously had a legacy with that franchise, but Elvin Hayes did as well. So I am going to go with Elvin Hayes. I think, to me, he's a pretty clear pick for this one, but I think Unseld made it interesting, and Dandridge should not be, you know, ignored as well. He was right in the mix all year.
Yeah, and Dandridge did help put them over the top finally. You know, they were a team that was gunning for a championship for a while, was a contender year, didn't quite make it, and Dandridge kind of helped put them over the top, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I think he was more of a compliment to those pieces rather than the go-to star, although he did certainly, you know, have some key shots and big moments. Yeah, I would agree with Hayes, and I think you know, if you look at box score plus minus, you know, Unseld carries it strong in the regular season, you know, 2.9 to only 1.1 for Dandridge, 0.6 for Hayes. But playoff time, you know, Hayes really steps up there. You know, 4.1 box score plus minus, you know, 3.6 for Unseld. And if you look at the minutes that Hayes is carrying, you know, playoff minutes, 868 for Unseld, only 677. I do think that matters, especially in the playoffs, to just be able to stay on the court, to be able to carry the load, especially when you're counted on to be the go-to scorer, to be the primary guy. Hayes was also an excellent defender. I mean, obviously Unseld was great at that, great at passing, great at rebounding. But, you know, Hayes was, I mean, he put up a lot of numbers and his shooting efficiency was never that great, but he was more than just, you know, putting up box score numbers. He was contributing to winning. You know, his teams won for the vast majority of his career. So I would give it to Hayes too. I mean, I see the arguments for Unseld. I see a little bit for Dandridge, but definitely I would say overall, I think it has to go to Hayes.
Yeah, you might, like, narrative-wise or at the time, people might think this is Unseld because Unseld had been with the franchise since, you know, what, 1968 or whatever, when they were in Baltimore and had lived through all the Baltimore years, had lived through the Capitol, you know, Bullets years and you know, some of the later Bullets years. But yeah, the fact that Hayes, he had been there for a few years as well, so it wasn't like he was a complete stranger to that franchise. To me, it's just, yeah, Hayes, like you said, just big numbers, big minutes played, affected both ends of the court. To me, he was the pretty clear case. But I thought Unseld made an interesting, compelling argument on his end, too.
Yeah, absolutely. He had, you know, he was the kind of player who had, you know, tremendous value without scoring. And there's a relatively short list of players, you know, who can make that case in NBA history, who could be, you know, the best player, close to the best player on, you know, on the franchise, on a championship level team. And he's, you know, one of the few guys that can definitely make that case.
Yeah. So.
All right. Next, we have the 1979 Supersonics. This is another well-balanced, no superstars team. In fact, no 1979 Sonic made an all NBA team, which is kind of wild. You know, they'd been the runner up for the championship before, so they hadn't come out of nowhere. They had the second best record in the league that year. So, you know, it's kind of hard to believe that, yeah, you could not fit Gus Williams or Dennis Johnson on the second team over, you know, Phil Ford or World Be Free. You know, it just, it seems a little bizarre. But yeah, looking at the case for the three best players in the team, which would be Gus Williams, Jack Sikma, Dennis Johnson. Gus Williams, you know, who was their point guard, 19.2 points per game, 4 assists, 2.1 steals per game. So, you know, solid numbers, not spectacular, not superstar level, but led the team in PER, led in win shares per 48, led in box score plus minus 4.9, which is way ahead of anybody else on the team in that metric. So that's a strong case for him, and played even better in the playoffs. I would say superstar level production, 26.7 points per game. So way up there. 6.7 box score plus minus, which is also, you know, led the team. And I think led the team by a fairly significant margin. So strong case for him, but let's go to the other players. Jack Sikma, 15.6 points per game, 12.4 rebounds, 3.2 assists, good passing for a big man. His numbers definitely did dip in the playoffs, which actually I think was a fairly consistent pattern for him in his career. And then Dennis Johnson, 15.9 points per game, 4.7 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.3 steals, 1.2 blocks per game, the high enough level of blocks for a guard for his team. You know, so definitely, I think, was more of a do-it-all than Gus Williams was. His numbers did go up in the playoffs, especially the box score plus minus went from 1.5 to 3.8. So still, you know, behind Williams significantly, but definitely went up. He was first team all defense. He was the 1979 finals MVP, which, you know, certainly says something. If you look at the numbers for Johnson, it was 22.6 points per game on about 20 shots per game, 6 rebounds per game, which is pretty high, 6 assists per game, 1.8 steals per game, 2.2 blocks per game. So still doing everything. That scoring went up, especially in the finals. Williams, 29 points per game on 23 shots, 3.6 assists, 3.6 rebounds, 1 steal per game. So also really good. Sikma, rebounding was good, 14.8, 3.2 blocks per game. That was good, 15 points per game on 14 shots. So efficiency wasn't there. It would be really interesting to see what the voting breakdown for this finals MVP was, and if Sikma, frankly, had any support. Yeah, I would say it's pretty much a toss-up between Johnson and Williams. I would say, yeah, probably DJ was the right choice, especially factoring in defense. I do wonder, because the previous Game 7 of the finals, you know, Dennis Johnson went 0 for 14.
Did not go well. Right. Did not go well, DJ.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if, like, there was, like, any, like, in the voters' minds, and this is still players voting. I believe they voted in the finals MVP. I know they voted in the regular season MVP. Actually, it might have been, it was probably more likely to be, because, you know, getting all the players to vote wouldn't make sense. It must have actually been media now that I'm thinking about it. But it'd be interesting to see if, like, that, you know, like, bounce back, like, redemption narrative had anything to do with, you know, getting the finals MVP in 79. Anyway. In any case, I'm going with the Wizard here. Gus Williams, Sonic's best player. Overall impact seemed a bit bigger than the other two. You know, DJ, I think, you know, that the fact that he, you know, was a more complete player and first team all defense and did actually win that finals MVP gives him somewhat of a boost, but I think Williams' numbers are just superior, you know, both in the playoffs and in the regular season. I think he's the pick.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, DJ would have been a fun pick here, but I don't think, like, yeah, he wasn't the best. I mean, maybe he won finals MVP, like you said. There was a lot of reasons why he did that, and the numbers are still very good for DJ. Don't get me wrong, the numbers are very, very good, but man, Gus did awesome stuff in the playoffs, awesome stuff in the regular season. He's not a jump off the page guy, like, you know what I mean, he isn't the guy that you definitely rough the top of your head, you're like, oh, it's gotta be Gus, you know, but I think you did a good case there. I think it's Gus Williams.
Well, thanks, Rich.
All right, so let's move to the Los Angeles Lakers of 1980 and 1985. So we did some other ones here. We obviously, if you were listening earlier, Magic Johnson, you voted him for 1982, 87, and 88. But these ones are a little up for debate. So 1980, obviously the subject of Winning Time right now on HBO. So you a lot of people know about this team that maybe did not know about it before. But, you know, that team, I think, is pretty clearly led by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar during the regular season. There's some things that do happen in the playoffs that might make it a little, you know, a little interesting for Magic Johnson, but let's lay out the case here. So Kareem Abdul-Jabbar during the regular season, 24.8 points per game, 10.8 rebounds per game, 3.4 blocks per game. Let's also give some love to Jamal Wilkes as well, 20 points per game on this team. 20-year-old Magic Johnson, though, he is in the mix as well. He jumps right out of the gates and goes to 18 points per game, 7.7 assists per game. Now, win shares tell a very similar tale as well. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is an absurd 14.8 win shares to lead the team. That is good. That is a very good number, in case you're playing along at home. But these other guys have great numbers, too. Magic Johnson is at 10.5, and Jamal Wilkes is at 10. Now, where things get really interesting are the playoffs. Now, Kareem's playoff numbers are absurdly great in 1980. 31.9 points per game, 12.1 rebounds per game, shooting 57.2% from the field, 3.1 assists per game, and 3.9 blocks per game. Now, Magic shows up to play as well. He raises the scoring average to, you know, 18.3 points per game, 10.5 rebounds per game. There's obviously the optics of him coming in to play center in the final game, yada, 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 that sort of stuff. But advanced stats-wise, it gets real close. Kareem is at 3.3 win shares. Magic is just below him at 2.8. To me, the answer has to be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with all the stuff that he has. But Magic, I think, does make it a little bit interesting in his rookie year, which I think is something to be said, that Magic, that early into his career, is already, you know, right there, you know, neck and neck with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as far as, like, being the best player on a championship team. I just wanted to point that out and talk about it. But to me, the answer has to be Kareem. When you average 31.9 points per game and 12.1 rebounds per game in the playoffs, it's Kareem. It's Kareem right now. But
yeah. No, I agree. That's hard to argue with. You know, I was looking at the season and some of the other things, and I found it interesting that Magic did not get an MVP vote this season, which, and Kareem was clearly the best player on the team and in the league, but I found it interesting that he did not get one. I mean, Dan Raunfeld got a MVP vote. I mean, you know, it's just sort of like, yeah, just like not a random one. I found that pretty interesting. He actually didn't even make either All-NBA team, which, you know, a little bit surprising. But actually, Dennis Johnson and Gus Williams both got their due. They got on the second team.
They had to make up for it. They're like, yeah. Sorry.
Everybody's here behind on that. So, yeah, exactly. So, So, you know,
which is crazy because, like, now that we know Matt, you know, in hindsight, it's like, here's Magic Johnson. He's immediately great. He immediately led the Lakers to the championship. Magic Johnson's the greatest player ever. You know what I mean? Like, right out of the gates. Like, the way if you watched a video about the season, it's, you know, Magic tips off. He does some crazy pass. He starts the finals game, and then he, you know, jumps up, and I forget who's smacking his ass. Someone's smacking someone's ass. I forget who it is.
Right.
Like, he jumps in someone's arm, and someone smacks someone's ass. And, like, that's what the clip would be. It would be that. Right. And you'd be like, wow, Magic Johnson's immediately great at basketball, and the Lakers are here forever. But, like, yeah, it's interesting that he doesn't get that due in terms of like the awards and stuff, which is kind of weird. But
yeah, and he like the rookie of the year is blowout. I mean, Bird destroys him. I think Magic got 3 votes and Bird got something like 60 votes. So, and you know, Bird, like, you know, the Celtics had won like 30 more games than they had the previous year. They had improved a lot more than the Lakers improved, who are already a pretty good team. So, you know, it's not, you know, it makes sense, but it does kind of counter the narrative. It took longer for Magic to be accepted as like MVP, one of the best players in the game, that I think we tend to accept. Obviously, you know, the play in winning the Finals MVP, the huge game he had in Game 6 certainly added to that, but it didn't. That wasn't immediately like, oh yeah, Magic is the best player. He went through some turmoil. He went through those tragic Johnson years in 84 series. It wasn't really until the mid 80s that it was more accepted that like, oh yeah, he is clearly, you know, like one of the best MVP level players, you know, in this league, one of the two or three best players in the league. So
let's get to 1985 now, because this is an interesting one here. By this point, Kareem is 37 and starting to slow down. Now, to be fair, starting to slow down for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is 22 points per game, 7.9 rebounds per game, which is not bad for a 37-year-old who's been playing for, like, multiple decades at this point. But Magic is pretty great, though, too. He's averaging 18.3 points per game, dishing out 12.6 assists per game, grabbing 6.2 rebounds per game. Magic is beating Kareem in win shares in the regular season, 12.7 to 11.2. It's closer than you may think, but Magic does have a clear edge there. Playoffs are much of the same. Magic is at 3.0. Kareem is at 2.5 in terms of win shares. James Worthy slides in at second at 2.6. Playoff scoring is interesting, though, because Kareem is at 21.9, so right where he was in the regular season, pretty much. Worthy steps up huge. He goes to 21.5, and Magic drops ever so slightly at 17.5. Where it does change, though, is Magic dishes out 15.2 assists per game in the playoffs and ups his rebounding to 7.1. So, yeah, when you get 17.5 points per game, 15.2 assists per game, and 7.1 rebounds per game, I think it's probably got to be you at this point. So I think it's Magic, but I think it's a lot closer than you might think between a 25-year-old, you know, absolutely in his prime Magic, and a 37-year-old kind of aging Kareem. I think Kareem does make it a very, very close, you know, race. Kareem does win the Finals MVP this year, but to me, I think it's Magic. What do you think? Do you have any arguments with that?
No, I don't. I do think it's very close, as you mentioned. You know, there really is, you know, not a huge amount of separation between the two. I mean, I agree with all basically everything that you said. In terms of that, yeah, if you look at like box score plus minus, you know, Magic in the playoffs is like 6.6, Kareem's like 5.4, which is really strong, especially for 37. You know, all the other numbers, you know, the scoring, the advanced stats, the shooting, the true shooting percentage, they're like 0.003 percentage points away from each other. I mean, like, all their numbers are extremely close, but I think, absent like any counter evidence, you know, if Kareem had like just totally like had like the best playoffs ever and Magic was just like kind of normal, I might be tempted to give it to Kareem here. But given everything else, you know, given the way Magic was playing, you know, he's probably the best player in the game at this point, or between him and Bird, you know, 1 and 2. You gotta give it to Magic, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Now, speaking of Bird, we're going to go to 1981. So, yeah, I would have expected this to be Larry Bird in a landslide. It would, you know, traditionally, obviously, Bird is seen as the best player on the team. I think he finished second in MVP voting that year, just behind Julius Erving, was first team all in NBA, you know, obviously seen as and was the clear star of the team. However, regular season, Robert Parrish makes a way better case than I would have expected. So, you look at Larry Bird, his numbers, 21 points per game. Parrish, 18.9 points per game. So close there. True shooting percentage, Bird, 53%, which is fine. Parrish, 58%, which is really good. 10.9 rebounds for Bird, 9.5 rebounds for Parrish, 5.5 assists, which is better than Parrish's. 2.6 blocks for Parrish, 2.0 steals for Bird. 19.9 PER for Bird, which is really good, but not superstar level. 25.2 PER for Robert Parrish, which
come on, Chief, let's get some respect on Robert Parrish, man. Yeah,
yeah.
Kind of thinks of him as like I think everybody thinks of Robert Parrish as like the late 80s Robert Parrish, where at that point he's just kind of a guy, you know what I mean? Like he's still capable of doing a lot
of stuff.
He's
still really good,
but he's not like He's not 25.2 PER, Robert Parrish. I mean, that is awesome.
Right.
Go Robert.
Which was a career high. And yeah, the next season he had 22.6, 23, and then it was basically in the 20s. He had a bounce back year in 89 at 35 still, you know. So he was going strong pretty well, actually, into the early 90s, better than you might expect. But anyway, so yeah, that's obviously a lot higher. 5.4 box floor plus minus, which is better than Bird, 4.3. So you might think, yeah, all right. You could talk me into Parrish. But playoffs wise, yeah, Bird's scoring 21.9 points per game. Parrish is only 15. Bird is a bit more efficient. Bird has 14 rebounds to 8.6, you know, and the advanced metrics, 21.8 PR. Parrish is down to 18.9. Boxer plus minus 7.7 to 2.3. So Parrish was actually fourth on the team. He was behind Kevin McHale as well and Cedric Maxwell. Cedric Maxwell, by the way, like his he won the finals MVP, and he played well. You know, he was a really efficient scorer, you know, 60 points per game on 64 true shooting, which is really huge. Don't know if I would have put him over Bird, honestly, there, but I mean, it's not like, I mean, so looking at the finals MVP, 17.7 points per game on 56 field goal percentage, 9.5 rebounds to Bird, 15.3 points per game. So it was higher there. The scoring efficiency was a lot better. Bird only shot 42% from the field. Of course, he's doing a lot more. 15.3 rebounds. So Bird averaged 15 points and 15 rebounds in the finals, which is pretty incredible. 7 assists per game, 2.3 steals. So I had to give it to Bird. Definitely going to give Bird the, you know, best player on this team. I mean, you look at the obviously the track record there, the fact that he played so much better in the playoffs, and the fact that also, again, he played a much larger Bird in terms of minutes. He played 39.5 minutes per game versus Parrish only having 28 minutes per game. So that definitely swings this to him. But yeah, I was surprised to see the numbers be so strong for Parrish and Bird's to be down a little bit from what I would have expected this year. But he definitely would, you know, really put superstar level production up, you know, pretty soon after this.
Yeah, yeah. It's similar to what we're talking about with Magic, where you just kind of assume that right out of the gates, he's ready to go, and he's already like an all, you know, the clear number one guy on that team. And that's, you know, not exactly the case. He would very soon thereafter be the number one guy. And at this point, he probably is the number one guy. But yeah, it is a little bit more of an argument than you might think.
Yeah, not quite undisputed.
Number right, one.
Like,
right, right.
He is
right.
Number one, but he's not quite like the go-to for everything. Like, right, absolutely.
Right, right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Or that, like, a finals MVP can be won by Cedric Maxwell without it just being immediately given to Bird. And, like, Bird had good numbers. Okay, cool. Bird, you obviously get it instead of, you know. Right. So interesting stuff there. But all right, we'll move on to the 1983 Philadelphia 76ers, a very important team in NBA history. And this one, it's a two horse race here. Sorry, Bobby Jones. You know, you're not in here. Andrew Toney, no. I apologize, but you're not in the mix here.
No Bologna? No?
No. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Bologna. Right. Yeah, no Bologna, Tony. Yeah. But right.
Fair enough.
This is between Moses Malone and Julius Dr. J. Irving here, but probably yeah. Moses. But I think Doc has a pretty good pace. So we're going to talk about Dr. J and Moses here. It's very hard to pick against Moses Malone because he here, you know, has an all-time great season. A cool 24.5 points per game, 15.3 rebounds per game, shooting 50% from the field for 15.1 win shares. Not bad. That's why he won the MVP. That's why he won the MVP the year prior. Back-to-back MVPs with two different teams. That's not bad. That's pretty good. Julius Irving, though, is solid as hell. 21.4 points per game and 10.9 win shares. Surprisingly, though, the playoffs don't help Irving as much as you might think. He actually falls a bit to 18.4 points per game, 7.6 rebounds per game, and 1.2 win shares. Moses dominates win shares, 2.8 win shares for him, and then even more so, 26 points per game, 15.8 rebounds per game, including 10.5 defensive rebounds per game. So if you took out every single offensive rebound that Moses Malone had, that man still averages a double-double in the playoffs with just defensive rebounds. That is pretty good. So Julius has a great year, instrumental in this team winning the title, but it's Moses Malone. There's, you know, there's a reason why he won back-to-back MVPs. There's a reason why he had the momentum going in. There's a reason, again, he joins Philadelphia and immediately says, hey, we're going to win the title, and we're going to beat everybody. You know what I mean? We're not going to lose an entire game. We're going to win every game. We're going to win the title. And they didn't win every game, but they won the damn title. So, yeah, it to me, the optics of Moses coming to town, them winning, that's nothing against Dr. J. it's Julius Erving, but yeah, he won this thing. And just to give you an idea of just how well-regarded this season was, he got 69, first-place votes. Larry Bird got one, Magic got two. So Julius did finish fifth in MVP voting, so put some respect on him, but as you can see there, fifth is like, got some votes. You know, when Moses takes home almost all of the first-place votes and is a landslide winner for MVP, he's definitely the guy here.
Sure. Yeah. Julius, the one that kind of case that I brought up is that he did your box score plus minus in the regular season, 6.5 to Moses 3.7. Now, box score plus minus has never really liked Moses for whatever reason, and all the other stats obviously tilt in Moses' favor. If Doc had been better in the playoffs, I would have maybe seen a stronger case for him. But as you mentioned, yeah, his numbers dipped in the playoffs. You know, everything definitely pointed to Moses in the playoffs. I mean, he had a great regular season, but even better playoff run, just, you know, kicked ass in every way. So definitely the catalyst for that team. Obviously, Doc was important. You know, he's one of the great players of all time and still was, you know, was older, but was still, you know, extremely important, extremely effective. And, you know, great player, but yeah, it was definitely Moses.
All right.
So yeah, less controversial than I thought it would be so far, you know, but we got
some juice coming. We got some juice coming,
yeah, I think. We got some controversy. Everybody, you know, favorite controversial team, the Bad Boy Pistons, 1989 and 1990. So we'll start with 89, obviously. And you look at it, you know, neck and neck, Bill Laimbeer, Dennis Rodman, Joe Dumars, Isaiah Thomas, all really productive. You look at their numbers, they're all within a few percentage points of each other in PER. Obviously, all had different skills that, you know, we'll kind of get into, all different roles, but all contributing on a high level, you know, which really was a team effort. Another, you know, no superstar. And actually, no 1989 Piston won an all-league, you know, award, which is kind of shocking because they made the finals the year before.
Yeah, helps the rep, though. It definitely helps the rep. I mean, Chuck Daly loved that. Chuck Daly was probably calling people saying, do not vote any of my guys, because then he could, you know, come with the newspaper the next day and go, look at these assholes. Nobody thinks you guys belong. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I was thinking, for whatever reason, oh, they were down a bit in the regular season. Yeah, no, they won 63 games.
No, they were so very good.
That was not the reason.
Probably because they were all gigantic douchebags and nobody liked them. That probably played a part in it.
I will agree with that, but honestly, you know what I think honestly probably had a lot to do with it. I think it was what Dumars and Isaiah Thomas said about Larry Bird, you know, that, or not Dumars, but Rodman saying Larry Bird was overrated because he was white, and Isaiah was like, yeah, I think it's probably true, which, by the way, totally valid, totally true, totally absolutely. The Larry Bird got, you know, different treatment because he was white versus, you know, versus the, you know, the rest of the league. Which, by the way, could you imagine how insufferable it would be today if there were, like, you know, a white player who was as good as Larry Bird today? Like, if you know, every, like, conversation you have to have with your uncle at Thanksgiving's about, like, Larry fucking Bird and, like, you know, like, oh, he's... Yeah, you know, this guy.
Well, that is coming in a few days when Chet Holmgren leads the Orlando Magic multiple NBA championships.
All right. I mean, luckily,
here first. I've correctly predicted his success as well as the team that's going to draft him. So yeah, get used to it. So tell your uncle to watch the NBA draft, because there is the new Great White Hope has arrived. And
there you go.
His name is Chet.
I mean, luckily with Jokic, like, the xenophobia is still more powerful.
Right, where nobody can say his name. A lot of
people.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so people are, you know, so white racists can't be like, oh, what about, you know, Jokic? Like, he's the best player. Like, you know, so I do think there are a few people in our community who are a little bit too enthusiastic about Jokic sometimes. But anyway, that's an aside. Yeah.
That's for another show.
So, yes. So looking at the case for the 89 Pistons. So Joe Dumars, you won the finals MVP, all defensive first team. Isaiah Thomas, he had the best box score plus minus and PR of the team in the playoffs, led the team in points per game and assists per game. Only knock on his would probably be just the shooting efficiency was not there, especially compared to Dumars. Now, he was asked to do more than Dumars was, but they, you know, they played similar roles. They played roughly, you know, same number of you know, minutes per game, were taking similar number of shots. It wasn't like, you know, Dumars didn't carry, you know, a heavy load. He definitely did. Bill Laimbeer, he led the team in box score plus minus and win shares in the regular season. You obviously they're lead big man, great defender. They all pretty much were great defenders. And then Rodman, first team all defense. He was important, obviously, but yeah, he was, coming off the bench to score. He only averaged 27 minutes per game in the playoffs and played even fewer in the postseason. He actually kind of struggled in the postseason. So, Rodman doesn't really have a strong argument here. So really, I would say toss up between Dumars and Thomas, really depending on how much you value Dumars' D and his better efficiency. I'm going to agree with the finals MVP voters in this case. Go with Joe Dumars. But extremely close. I can see why people might go with Isaiah in this case too. What do you think?
Yeah, this is a tough one. And it seems to be a Pistons thing because we're going to have very similar arguments when we get to 2004. But yeah, man, I don't know. It's a tough one. I think I'm with Dumars as well. I think he's, the defense plays a big part. Like, because you're really going to have to start, these guys are all very, very close. They're all contributing. They're all different ways. And the scoring is all pretty much the same or very similar. Dumars does step up come finals time. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know that there's a wrong pick between Dumars or Isaiah. I think you could pick either of those two and be okay. I'm with you on Dumars, I think, but yeah, I could definitely be swayed on Isaiah. I feel like this is a tough one. This is our first total coin flip one where if you came on here and did the exact opposite argument for Isaiah, I'd probably be like, yeah, that sounds great. Isaiah is definitely the one. I don't know. This is really too close to call, man. This is tough.
Yeah, I would say a 90 is similar, but I think it's clearer. So Isaiah wins the finals MVP. By far, he has the best box score plus minus in PER in the playoffs. Dumars is, again, all defensive first team and also all NBA third team. Rodman, again, is all defensive first team. He's still playing 29 minutes per game. So he's not quite, playing quite heavier minutes yet than I think he would later in the 90s. And Laimbeer, again, leading the team in win shares. But honestly, I don't see him as a serious candidate. So, yeah, but I mean, Thomas in the postseason, he has 7.6 box score plus minus, which is superstar level, 21 PER. He's averaging 20.5 points per game, 8.2 assists, 5.5 rebounds, which, for a guard his size, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's kind of doing everywhere, 56 true shooting, which is obviously pretty strong, especially for him. He wasn't normally that efficient for a lot of seasons in his career, which is kind of the knock. The year before, he had 5.01 true shooting. So definitely, yeah, I think based on the strength of playoff run, based on the reputation, based on the fact that, yeah, it's so close between the two of them. And obviously Rodman and Laimbeer have at least somewhat of a case, although not, a particularly strong one. Got to go with Isaiah here.
Yeah. No love for the microwave, though. And, man.
No, Vinny Johnson. I'm sorry. Right. Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
I mean, I like the microwave. But yeah.
If you were the oven, maybe, but
it was the, microwave. It was the convection oven. Maybe.
Yeah. You got to play long enough to be, if you're only going to play the microwave, you're not going to play oven minutes, then I'm just not going to consider you. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Hit the bricks, Vinny. There you go. So then, we're going to jump ahead many, many years because obviously you talked about this before. The 90s are pretty locked in. Michael Jordan, I think, pretty clearly the dude for the Bulls. Hot take there, but Michael Jordan, probably the best guy on the Chicago Bulls in the 90s.
Probably.
I think that's the case. Yeah. Hakeem Olajuwon, very clearly the top dude on the Houston Rockets as well. Right. So that takes up the whole 90s. So then we jump all the way up to the last year of the 90s to 1999, with a very interesting year here with the San Antonio Spurs. And this one is not going to be easy. These guys were razor thin throughout the year. The easy answer is to go with Duncan, and narrative-wise, it definitely works. He comes onto the team a year earlier, clearly is ready for the NBA right off the bat, and the team could, obviously had never been able to get over the hump after years and years and years of being good. And it's not just Robinson. We've talked about this before on this show. The Spurs have been a great franchise for, as long as they've been around. They've basically been a solid-as-hell team. Once Robinson gets there, they're a very, very solid team. They just can't get over the hump. They can't make it to the finals. They can't win a title. Duncan comes. They win the title. They make it over the hump. They get there. So narrative-wise, you're thinking, well, the difference maker is Duncan. And you're not wrong. It is. But I do think that Robinson does have a very compelling case. In the regular season, now this is lockout shortened, of course, from the 99 lockout. Duncan averages 21.7 points per game, 11.4 rebounds per game, and 2.5 blocks per game for 8.7 win shares. Robinson is right there with him, though. 15.8 points per game, obviously lower in the scoring. 10 rebounds per game, lower in the rebounding. 2.4 blocks per game right there. But thanks to his run on the game, great defense, all that sort of stuff, he's not far off in terms of win shares. He's at 8.4 to Duncan's 8.7. Now, if you're thinking, hey, well, the playoffs are going to luckily split this up, well, no, not at all, because Duncan leads the team in points and rebounds, 23.2 points and 11.5 rebounds, has a team-high 3.7 win shares, but Robinson, though, is really good as well, 15.6 points per game, 9.9 rebounds per game, and again, right there, very close in win shares at 3.0. So, I think it's Duncan, you know, optics, narrative, on-court play, I think it's Duncan. Robinson does make it interesting. And there's part of me that wants to give it to Robinson as kind of a lifetime achievement award, if you want to call it that or whatever. But to me, I think at this point, and especially during this year, it became clear, okay, Duncan's going to lead this team like for the next couple decades now. Like, this is the dude, this is the guy, and this was definitely the year that I think he passed him. So I'm going to go with Duncan here, but it was very, very close. I think it's Duncan.
Yeah, to me, it's almost a little bit similar to what we talked about with the 56 Warriors, talking about Neil Johnston and Paul Arizin. It was just like, yeah, Neil Johnston year after year just put up huge numbers, was insanely productive, you know, was carrying the team, but the team sort of, you know, they won some years and they didn't win other years. Now, the Spurs won most years. You know, the year they didn't win was with Robinson, but they never got above a certain level. I think Duncan was that guy who elevated them. And I think based on that, the fact that, yeah, all the numbers are really close, I would go with Duncan as well, kind of just without any other compelling evidence ahead of us. I think you have to go with Duncan just based on, you know, what else he accomplished in his career and the fact that, yeah, his presence meant leading the team. He also, he had 733 playoff minutes. David Robinson only had 600. You know,
right. Which, yeah. He carried the big load, scored the most points, it's Duncan. Yeah. Yeah. And like maybe at the beginning of the year, you would have said, hey, if the Spurs win the title, it's definitely be because of David Robinson. But by the end of the year, you were like, oh, yeah, this Duncan guy's like fucking incredible. Yeah. Right. And this guy's probably going to be the best player in the league for many, many years moving forward. And then he was. He didn't do it with the Orlando Magic, though. Remember when he was about to leave?
To join the Orlando Magic. Yeah. So much. Well, the Magic are going to get that white guy, so that's going to be good.
Yeah, yeah. They're good. Chet Holmgren. So that's good. They'll make up for it. Come on. Put some respect on Chet's name here. Come on.
I'm glad that the white savior of the NBA's name is Chet.
Yes. Somehow that's perfect, right? Yeah. Isn't it perfect? Yeah. It'd be better if it was like Caden or something like that.
Right, right. There are more Chets than you would have expected.
Is that true? Okay.
Well, we got Chet Walker, obviously. We got.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're making fun of Chet. One of the all time coolest dudes in the world is named Chet.
Well, I'm not trying to. I'm not saying all Chets. This is not all Chets. You know, this is
leave Chets alone.
I'm sorry. So we got Chet Carlisle, who played 51 games in the 1947 season. So we have. Let's see. Who are the other Chets? So sorry. We got Chet. Albuchin, who played 1947 as well, and Chet McNabb. We got three other Chets who are listed who don't have a season. Okay, we got Chet Forte. He was drafted by the Royals, but never played in the league. Okay, that's interesting. And we got a couple other Chets anyway. I don't want to over-Chet this year, but this is interesting stuff. Perhaps a Chet episode is in our future. You never know.
Yeah, Chet. Yeah, we'll talk them all. Yeah. It's going to be quick because I don't have a ton of Chet Forte facts, but we'll find them. We'll find them. Yeah. So Chet I want to learn more about Chet No.
Absolutely. I would say the best Chet other than Chet Walker would be Steve Buscemi Chet from Barton Fink. You know,
What about Chet Stedman from Rookie of the Year, the hit 90s baseball movie? Do you remember that?
Oh, I had somehow forgotten about all of that. So, yeah, it's just changing my thinking right now.
See,
yeah.
There's a lot of Chet stuff we could do. Chet Stedman.
All right.
Gary Busey's finest work.
Absolutely. All right. Back to basketball. 2001 Lakers. So we mentioned earlier, 2000, 2002. Very clearly Shaq. Well, 2001. A little closer. So we kind of picked all of these, the ones that were worth discussion, debate, you know, with, you know, mostly a cursory glance at Basketball Reference, or, you know, in some cases, obviously, you know, we knew in depth, you know, kind of that there would be an idea of a debate. Well, 2001, I kind of took a cursory glance. I was like, yeah, Kobe did play pretty well this year. Yeah, maybe there's a case. Well, looking at it more in depth, yeah, there's not all that much of a case. You know, Kobe's pretty even with Shaq during the playoffs. That's, you know, that was the kind of the one case. Like, he did, he had more win shares. They were exact the same in box score plus minus, you know, pretty close in PER and other metrics. You know, scoring wise, you know, Shaq averaged 30 points per game. Kobe averaged 29 points per game. So, you know, those numbers all pretty good in the playoffs. Yeah, they were extremely close. If you want to just pick playoffs, Shaq averaged 30.4 points per game and 15.4 rebounds per game. So that's pretty hard to beat. You know?
That's pretty good. Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah. So, and Shaq was clearly superior in the regular season. So honestly, yeah, definitely Shaq by a landslide. 0-2, I did dig into that slightly, even though it wasn't technically on our list. But yeah, Kobe was actually pretty even with Shaq in the regular season, but Shaq was clearly better in the playoffs. So there was no time where Kobe, you know, contributed better than Shaq, both in the playoffs and in the regular season, the same season. So you got to go with Shaq by default there, even though, yeah, I mean, Kobe obviously was clearly the number two player there, clearly really important, hit big shots, all that good stuff. But yeah, Shaq for sure, all 3 years.
Yeah, he was the best player and he was the engine that really made it all work. You know what I mean? Like everything that was great about that team in that time, a lot of it was, you know, you needed Shaq to be that.
And Kobe was obviously, I mean, he made them great too. I mean, they were very, very important. Yeah, but don't yell at us, Kobe stands. But
the best player was Shaq at that time. It's fine. And that's fine to admit. And that's what made them so dominant. And when Kobe got great, then they became like unbeatable. And that's when they were unbeatable for like 3 straight years, because it was like, oh, Kobe's great too. Oh, and Shaq's already great. Great. Well, this is not going to go well for anybody. And it didn't. Absolutely. It didn't go well for anybody. They beat everybody pretty easily. So. Yeah, sorry, Aaron Williams-led New Jersey Nets. You're not going to win much because these guys are going to destroy you. Sorry, Aaron McKee.
Listen, I think Aaron Williams. I think the narrative is going to turn eventually on Aaron Williams. I think we're
going to
see. Yeah,
turtle. Yeah, eventually. Yeah,
exactly. Eventually.
Eventually on him. But let's get to a team that was able to beat the Shaq and Kobe Lakers, because at this point they all hated each other a lot, and then Karl Malone was there and then they hated him too, and then Gary Payton was there and he was kind of like, I don't probably like any of you guys either, and they all hated each other, and then they lost. They had a really good season, but they still lost, and the Pistons beat them. So now this is the prototypical team that most people bring up as far as like an even, well-rounded team without a superstar that won a title. When any team and their franchise think, hey, maybe we'll win a title, and somebody goes, yeah, but like, you don't have any stars. Like, no, but the Pistons won a title. It's like, okay, well, your team's not good though. Like, this team was really, you know, like, everybody brings up the one example, well, what about the Pistons? It's like, okay, well, if you can recreate what the Pistons did, which again is not that they had like no good players, is that they had a bunch of good players but not one guy that very clearly jumps off the page here. But we're going to try to come up with the official person that was the best player on the 2004 Pistons. So let's try it here. Statistically, goddamn it, they're all really close again. Okay, they're very well rounded. Now one player clearly emerges as far away the best player on the team, which sucks. So in the regular season, Rashid was great, but he only played 21 games. Now, do we strike that against him? Does that help his case? Does it help his case that once he got to the team, it felt like they were really primed and ready for this run? They weren't a bad team before this. They had made Eastern Conference Finals. They had made good runs, but like, he comes to the team and immediately it feels like, oh, well, now these are real dudes. Now this is a real team. Does that help his case or not? We'll get to that in a second, I guess. I mean, maybe off the top of your head, Jason, do you think that kind of helps Rashid's case? Because, like, yeah, he only played 21 games, but those are very impactful 21 games.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't count it against him because, I mean, and I think there is a case that it helps his case because, yeah, they did turn – they were good already, but they turned into a different team with him and improved with him, and he completed them. The issue that you allude to is, yeah, in the playoffs, I mean, he was fine, but didn't really pan out. He was definitely not the best player on the team in the playoffs, so that hurts his case, I think.
All right, so maybe Rashid sucks. Yeah. We got that. All right, so
right, exactly. Yes,
I think very clearly you're saying no. Yeah, he's it's actually interesting because I always kind of thought Sheed was like awesome in the playoffs for that team, and he really was. We'll talk about it in a bit. He really wasn't. Right, but big part of the regular season, big part of them turning around and really feeling like, okay, this is a real team that can make a run here. Chauncey Billups, clearly the best Piston through the regular season, to me. 16.9 points per game, 11.3 win shares. That's the best on the team, because everybody else is pretty close too. Big Ben Wallace, of course, the engine that made everything go, really, on the defensive end, gave that team their identity, gave everybody, you know, really kind of got the Pistons to the level that where they got to was when they added Big Ben and he started to kind of figure out what his game was. That's when things really start going. 9.5 points per game, 12.4 rebounds per game, 3 blocks per game, 10.2 win shares. Now, Rip Hamilton was very good, but not enough to unseat either Billups or Wallace, I don't think, at 17.6 points per game, 8.1 win shares. Now, the playoffs, will they help us come to a conclusion? Well, not really. So again, narrative-wise, Rashid was the difference maker coming over midseason, propelling the team from the Eastern Conference, kind of cute story, to a bona fide championship contender and a championship winner. But he struggled in the playoffs. He scored only 13 points per game on 41.3% shooting. Billups, he averaged 16.4 points per game and 5.9 assists per game and a team-high 3.7 win shares. He shot 38.5% from the field. So, yeah, mid-2000s basketball, everybody. Back when basketball was played by real men.
Right.
And they missed a lot of shots. Because Chauncey Billups, under 40% for the playoffs. But still, good numbers.
But, Rich, they didn't miss a lot of threes, and that's the important thing.
Right, they made right. all
they missed
the
a lot of mid-range. They missed a lot of – no, they, well, they didn't shoot a lot of threes, so they didn't miss a lot of threes. And they, right. they missed a lot of mid-range jumpers. Real men missed mid-range jumpers, not threes.
Exactly. Right.
right.
Instead of these
yes.
three-pointers.
Right.
Yeah, get out of
yeah.
here. Kids.
Right.
Exactly. Anyway, I might be biased here because he's Maybe. One of my favorite players growing up. We are going to ignore that he at one point played for my favorite basketball team and he was not good. We're just going to strike that from the record. I don't even remember that happened. Ben Wallace played for the Bulls? What are you talking about? That didn't happen.
Right.
But
right.
he had a
yeah.
great playoffs here. He got a scoring up over 10.3, 14.3 rebounds per game, 2.4 blocks per game. His win shares are super close to Billups at 3.6. Back score plus minus likes Wallace a lot better than Billups as well, 5.3 to 4.6. And let's get some love to Richard Hamilton, too. He was great in the playoffs. 21.5 yeah. points per game, 44.7% shooting for 3.5 win shares. Now,
do you acknowledge that he was in the Bulls or no?
Not really.
All right, fair enough.
I kind of forgot that until you mentioned it. I'm thinking, well, right, he was. Yes.
Yeah.
No, I do not. Okay, I just realized, right. no, I do not acknowledge that. It, like, quite sure. literally don't acknowledge. Like, I remember that Ben Wallace is, but I choose to ignore it. When you mentioned it there, that is the first time since Rip Hamilton left the Bulls that I remember that Rip Hamilton was on the Bulls. But no, I do not acknowledge it or remember it. But he was great. This is tough. I think it's a toss-up between Billups and Big Ben. Sheed was obviously best in the regular season, but only played half of it. Not strong in the playoffs. I think Billups was very, very good. I think if you wanted to make a case for Billups, I could definitely listen to that. I think I'm going with Ben Wallace, though. I think just the identity of that team was so rooted in what Ben Wallace was doing. And so much of kind of his mentality and his force on the rebounding and his force on the defensive end. I think I go with Big Ben, but I think you can make an argument for Billups. I don't know. I'm kind of going to cop out on this. What do you think, Jason? I it's too close to call for me.
Yeah, Billups was the Finals MVP. It's, you know, whatever. Yeah, I mean, Hamilton was strong in the playoffs and probably their best playoff performer overall. I mean, everything else is pretty close. Yeah, I think so. You know, this is a little bit kind of close to the 78 bullet situation that we talked about where, you know, it Unsell does so much that doesn't necessarily show up in the box score. And you know, plays a solid defense. He, you know, he's a guy who doesn't score, but he does everything else so well. He defends, you know, and that obviously that shows up in some of the numbers. I think that I would go with Wallace as well. I would be okay with Billups. You know, I would even be okay. I'd even be okay with Sheed, I think. I don't think the numbers bear it out necessarily, but I do think that, I mean, there was some level of other impact there. But honestly, I mean, he also averaged like 13.7 points per game and 7 rebounds per game. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, good numbers, and they were a little better in the playoffs, but it wasn't like he was like the superstar who came in. He was just like a really good, you know, better than role player, but in terms of numbers wise, yeah, that was just, he was just like the piece that was missing, but he wasn't like the superstar that came in and put everything on his back. You know, wasn't
right,
that kind of
right,
playoffs
right.
for him.
Yeah, like, I mean, he may have done like the, you didn't show up in the box score, but he was like really, you know, rallying the team back in
right.
the locker room and all that sort of stuff. And okay, that's fine.
Right.
Like, you know, whatever, you know,
yeah.
He changed. But yeah, I think Ben Wallace has a lot of that too. I mean, I don't know.
Right, agreed.
It's tough to call. I think you could go with either Billups or Wallace. I am going to go with Wallace here, but I think either of those ones would be a compelling case. But as is the, I mean, this 2004 Pistons, they did as the reputation is, it is too close to call for this team. Just both guys great. So who knows? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to go with Ben Wallace, but yeah, none of us feel great about it. So
no.
You got any wants to debate that? Because is welcome to team welcome effort. To throw down Twitter. Yeah, we'll defend our honor, you know. Or I will cop out on Rich in the first choice and be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Rich, why did you say Big Ben? How dare you?
Yeah, of course.
How dare you say Ben Moss?
Of course it's Mehmet Okur.
Yes. Of course it's Lindsey Hunter.
Darvin
Ham. Do you acknowledge that Lindsey Hunter played for the Bulls?
I do remember Lindsey because he was like 400 pounds. And like, I remember Bulls fans were like, why is this guy on the team? And like, he's like a coach on the floor. And I'm like, well, then make him a coach on the bench and get a real player. Like, you know, like, he's never on the floor because he's too fat to play.
Fantastic.
And like, they're like, well, he's a coach on the floor. And I'm like, make him all a coach then.
All right. Fair enough.
He was look up Lindsey Hunter Bulls. You'll see what I'm talking about. He's as big as a house. Right. He's massive. He had like a Udonis Haslem thing where he just didn't play, but I don't know. It wasn't
right.
I feel like I could believe that Udonis Haslem is helping the Heat. I had trouble believing that.
Didn't he coach the Suns and like got fired like really like ooh, soon into it? Like something weird happened with that. Yeah,
maybe. Yeah, I remember him getting coaching jobs, and then I don't know what the hell he's doing these days.
Like he was there for like one season, and it got really weird. And
in Phoenix, no way.
Like, I know. Yeah,
it's kind of weird. Quickly, yeah. In Phoenix. Yes, 2012-2013 season. He was 12-29, and they fired him.
Okay.
So there you go. And now he was the Mississippi Valley State University head coach, but he is no longer that. He stepped down in March of 2022, so he's available.
To
bring onto your team if you'd like. So
absolutely, yeah, I'm sure NBA staff's looking for him anyway. All right, so now we've got 2005 and 2007 Spurs, and we're gonna look at Manu Ginobili here because I mean, we all look at all the Spurs obviously, but 2005, looking at Duncan, Ginobili, and Tony Parker. Duncan, first team all NBA, first team all defense, finals MVP. You know, numbers are great. Leads the team in win shares, leads the team in PER, leads in box score plus minus, you know, leads in pretty much every stat that matters. But Ginobili's really close. Yeah. You look at win shares, 11.2 to just 11. Box score plus minus is close. You know, he's contributing heavily. You know, the minutes, I mean, Duncan's averaging 33 a game. Ginobili's averaging like 30. So that's close too. It's not like, I mean, Duncan's playing more, obviously, but it's not like so much more that you would be like, oh, yeah, Duncan's has so much more of a heavy load. Continue.
No. I was just saying, yeah, I think Ginobili at this time, it's like, I think it's probably still Duncan, and you're going to go through that here. But yeah, Ginobili was a very, very good player. There was like, I think people remember him like first coming in the league and then maybe the later years, but there was a couple years where it was like, dude, this team is not good without Ginobili and Parker also being great as well. I mean, Duncan was still great, but he wasn't as great as he was in 2003. He kind of slowed down a little bit, but a lot of that was because these other two dudes emerged and he didn't have to do as much. He was able to kind of say, hey, I got two other guys that can come off, one guy that can come off the bench, or, you know, at this time Ginobili's still starting, but like, you know, guys that can, yeah, that just contribute almost of an equal level as me as well. So yeah, it was a lot closer than a lot of people think.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Ginobili was like, I mean, he didn't play like heavy minutes, but he was giving superstar level production, for the team, in less minutes than a superstar normally plays, but absolutely was contributing at a high level for quite a few years. But yeah, so he led the Spurs in postseason win shares and box score plus minus by a lot, 9.2 to 5.5 for Duncan. The PR is basically identical. He steps up in the playoffs big. Duncan improves as well. But again, as we mentioned, basically nearly even with Duncan and all the major regular season metrics, advanced metrics. Parker and -2.7 box score plus minus in playoffs. So the playoffs not good for Parker, and not really. I mean, he was good, but not really on the level of the other two guys, to be honest. So I'm going to go with Ginobili here because of that postseason run. I think that's enough for me to be willing to vote him ahead of Duncan. I don't blame anybody for drawing the opposite opinion. You know, it is strong. Obviously Duncan, is providing more defense. There's things that aren't being captured here that would favor Duncan. Obviously, they're both Hall of Famers, but Duncan's like, no doubt, top 10, top 15 all-time player, and Ginobili's not at that level despite being great. So yeah, I don't feel like 100% good about it, but I'm going with Ginobili here.
Yeah, let's have some fun. Give Manu right. something. Yeah, give Manu.
Why not?
Yeah,
Why not?
Great playoff. I mean, that playoff run was great. I mean, he steps up big time in those playoffs for the Spurs. So no, I'm I don't mind that pick at all. I think Manu was great, great in the playoffs and enough to make a case for him for sure. So, yeah, I'm down with it.
2007, Duncan, first-team All-NBA again, first-team All-Defense again. He does have the best, pretty much all the advanced stats in the metric in the playoffs favor him. Ginobili did have a better box score plus-minus in the regular season. You know, his numbers are very close to Duncan's there. So, you know, it's close in both, but Duncan is definitely better in the playoffs this year. Parker wins the finals MVP. I mean, his numbers are fine too, but they're definitely, again, a level below Ginobili and Duncan. I guess they got bored giving it to Duncan, so they gave it to Parker, which, you know, again, didn't merit. It was a 4-game sweep. So, like, you know.
Yeah, like, I don't know. What do you want us to say? It's,
whatever.
His series is kind of boring.
Yeah.
LeBron was here, but then he was gone real quick, and, well. Drew Gooden was the next best player. I don't know. Tony, just take it. Give it to Tony. Give it to Tony.
Right. Just get give it to
just right this happen.
So, yeah. So I'm giving, again, absent a strong case for Ginobili in any of these, I'm going to give it to Duncan, you know, obviously. So going to go with Tim here.
There we go. All right.
All right.
The 2008 Celtics, Jason, I don't know if you've heard, but this team won an NBA championship. The 2008 Celtics won the NBA championship this year.
Okay.
They had Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, and Rajon Rondo were on this team.
Right.
And they came together and won an NBA championship. Yeah.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but they won like four or five others because of how much we talk about this era.
Yes.
The Celtics, obviously, they won multiple championships in their dynasty, right?
I am not going to look it up, but I think off the top of my head, they won the next four titles.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then the Mavs won in 2011. I forget. Yeah. That sounds about right.
Sounds about right. Yeah. Sounds reasonable. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not going to look it up. I'm just going to trust the old brain here that's exactly what happened.
Yep.
So, anyway, narrative wise, this one is tough because Pierce was on the team for a decade at this point. There wasn't one guy that they added to become a champion, but rather they got both Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett. And on the court, the big three are all pretty close. Kevin Garnett leads the team in win shares at 12.9 in the regular season, backed by 18.8 points per game, 9.2 rebounds per game. Paul Pierce just a hair below KG in win shares at 12.4 and leads the team in scoring at 19.6. Ray Allen trails both of them pretty significantly in win shares at 9.7. But his on-court numbers are great, 17.4 points per game, shooting nearly 40% from three. Now, in the playoffs, Garnett steps up big time. He ups his scoring and rebounding, 20.4 points per game, 10.5 rebounds per game, leads the team in win shares at 4.1. Ray Allen slides into second in win shares at 3.1 with 15.6 points per game, and again, 40% from three. And Paul Pierce, good numbers, a hair under Allen at 3.0 win shares with 19.7 points per game. So it's pretty close, but I think I'm pretty comfortable giving it to Kevin Garnett. I think, you know, Pierce is right there, and Pierce is pretty close, but I think when you add in, again, like, you know, Garnett comes to the team, and he's clearly the biggest piece to me of the acquisitions. Ray Allen was a great piece. Obviously, adding Ray Allen was great, but almost immediately you could tell Ray Allen would be the third most important guy on this team, you know, pretty quickly thereafter, while Garnett would be the dude. I mean, Garnett is absolutely in his prime here at 31, coming off some great years in Minnesota. So to me, it's him, and him stepping up as big as he did in the playoffs, that sort of works for me as well. So I am going to go with Kevin Garnett.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, and we know that Garnett was the guy who was doing a lot of the little things, you know, driving them there, that defensive improvement. I mean, was obviously the play and motivation of KG was a really important part of that. You know, and you look at, you know, the box score stats, the advanced stats, you know, he's leading the way in most of them. I do think it's pretty clear. I mean, obviously, Pearson Allen also played really well, but I do think that, I think it's very clearly a Kevin Garnett. Something looking into this team, I had actually forgotten that Tony Allen played for this team.
Yeah, totally, yeah. He had a weird Boston run. Do you remember the there was the one year where like they called a whistle and then he went to go dunk after the whistle and tore his ACL?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, because there was a long time where everybody was like, this guy's a clown, what an idiot, what a dummy. And then like it's so weird how his reputation became like, this is the smartest player on the floor. This is the veteran, like Tony Allen.
Right.
He's the best. Like, so, he had a very weird boss. I would have assumed that, like, when you look at his numbers and look at how his career was going, that, like, Tony Allen would have been a guy that, like, just fell off the map. You know, just you'd never remember seeing him ever again. But then he ended up having, like, another decade in the league and ended up being, like, really good for a lot of good teams. So,
Well, then he got in trouble for swindling.
Oh, that's right. He was one of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Right.
Man, there's a lot of There's a lot of fun guys that I used to like that are on that list, and it's like, oh man. Wasn't he one of the, I don't want to call him the ringleader, but I think he was pretty high up in the, did anything ever come of that? Like, what are we doing?
There's been some, I was looking that up actually, a couple of, not Allen, but a couple of former players are pleading guilty, are getting, Jamario Moon and Anthony Rutten. So, plea deals. Anyway, we'll see.
Yikes.
So, anyway, so that was fun. Maybe not
insurance fraud.
Not ideal. Yeah, I can't believe. Yeah, I completely forgot he was there. He played there for like 5-6 years. It totally. Anyway, 2009-2010 Lakers. Kobe or Pau Gasol? Of course, you know Kobe. The Kobe Shaq year. Shaq leaves. The Lakers are in the wilderness for a couple years, but then, hey, they kind of rebuild the team. They get Phil Jackson back, and, hey, they luck into a beneficial trade for Pau Gasol. They get another star, and things go well. They make the 2008 finals, and they win the 2009 and 2010 championships. So, you know, I think reputation-wise, Kobe is definitely clearly seen as the better player. But, you know, take a look at the numbers. Well, it's close. I'm still going to go with Kobe here. Pau did lead regular season win shares. Box score plus minus favors Kobe by a decent amount. Obviously Kobe's taking the scoring load. You know, Kobe's the guy everyone's keying their defense for. Pau's important too, and he's a great player. You're probably a little bit underrated. Even though he played for the Lakers, I still say in some respect I think his contributions were maybe not quite as appreciated, but yeah, I would say. And then playoff performance, Kobe pretty much outshines Pau in everything. 9.1 box score plus minus to 5.3. All the numbers are up there. He has a brilliant playoffs in there, 2009. I think 2009, it's absolutely, clearly Kobe.
Yeah.
2010, it's a little closer. Pau is a, he leads in win shares 11.0 to 9.4 in the regular season. Box score plus minus also, 4.9 to 4.1. PER 2, all the advanced numbers in the regular season favor Pau. But playoff time, Pau does win in win shares there. Kobe's, gets in box score plus minus and, some of the other runners. But, Kobe's also, scoring 29 points per game in the playoffs, over 23 games. He's carrying such a heavy burden for that team that it would have to really be, a really clear case for me to pick Pau over Kobe either one of these years. And like I would say, I would say the numbers overall might even give Pau a slight edge, but just, knowing what I know about, what we saw when we were there, Pau was absolutely a really important contributor, but I think, these were Kobe's teams.
Right. The reason that these teams won the title was because of Kobe Bryant. Having Pau there obviously changed everything, made it a lot easier for Kobe to win these titles. But yeah, having watched all these games and remember watching this in real time, this was Kobe. The box score plus minus and the win shares and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, because Kobe was Kobe, and he shot under 50%, 45% from the field in the playoffs. So some of those efficiency numbers are going to suffer, especially when Gasol was a very efficient player, and he always was in his entire career. He was very efficient about where he shot. He was very efficient about how he shot and where he got his points and all that sort of stuff. So those sort of numbers are going to look better. But Kobe averaged nearly 30 points a game in the 2010 playoffs, and Pau has win shares. Pau has some of the other stuff here and there, but these are Kobe's teams for sure. So yeah, I think there's interesting cases. Maybe it's not obvious. Like there might be people that would say, "Oh my God, it's so clearly Kobe." I don't think it very clearly is. Like I think there is at least an argument to be made for it, but it's not it's one that would be really tough. Like you said, Pau had to really, really dominate, clearly dominate, and I just don't think he does to take these away from Kobe. He's in the mix, but you got to be really, really great. You got to be all time great to take these titles away from Kobe. I think.
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that.
Now, this is a fun one. The 2014 San Antonio Spurs. So now it's probably Kawhi Leonard, but Duncan, still stout at this time, still pretty good. Manu Ginobili, not bad either. And this is kind of an interesting one. With the benefit of hindsight, it's probably obvious and easy to say it's Kawhi Leonard. But at this time, we didn't quite know what he was going to become. Like, we've kind of retconned this into him being the best and the most important guy on this team. But I think a lot of that is because we would then find out later in future years that, oh, yeah, he is the best and the most important guy. And, oh, yeah, this guy is incredible. And, oh, yeah, he's going to lead this team to a title. And he's going to lead this team to a title. And he's going to do this sort of stuff. With that said, though, he does have a great case on stats and merit as well. So he leads the team in win shares during the regular season at 7.7 with 12.8 points per game, 6.2 rebounds per game, and his always insanely great defense, of course. Tim Duncan is no slouch at all, though, as he is starting to wind down his career here. He has 15.1 points per game, 9.7 rebounds per game, and he's just under Kawhi at 7.4 win shares as well. But hey, did I say Manu? I meant Marco Bellinelli. What about my man Marco Bellinelli? 5.9 win shares. Put some respect on Marco Bellinelli's name. We're not going to bring up what he did in the playoffs. That's irrelevant to this discussion. Right. Just trust me, they were great, and he definitely belongs in this conversation at all.
Now,
but what I'm going to do is not mention him again, though. Just trust me that he belongs in the conversation, but I'm no longer going to include him in the conversation that I'm going to have. So.
All right. Sorry, I do have to interrupt, though. Do you recognize Marco Bellinelli as a Chicago Bull?
Yes. Oh, I always recognize Marco Bellinelli as a Chicago Bull. Yes.
Good.
Don't worry.
All right. I appreciate that. All right.
Yeah. I have a connection to Marco Bellinelli that I'll always. Yeah. I do remember him as a Bull. And then there was one point where when I was in Italy, I was shopping and there was it was like a small little store on the Amalfi Coast or whatever. And I went in and I bought a Sprite and Marco Bellinelli was on the Sprite can.
Ooh.
And I walked up to the guy and I'm like, yeah, Marco Bellinelli, thinking like, hey, Italian basketball player. Sure, and he looked at me and he goes, who? And I said, Marco Bellinelli, this guy. And he goes, who? I was just like, all right, well, never mind. Apparently nobody knows who Marco Bellinelli is. That's fine. Like, if he was a member of Real Madrid, I'm sure he would know who he was. If he was on, a football team, he might know. But yeah, this man had no earthly idea who the fuck Marco Bellinelli was. Is it Marco Bellinelli? He plays basketball. He goes, basketball. Yeah. He just kind of goes like this. I'm like, all right, that's fair enough. I bought that can, though, and I enjoyed that Marco Bellinelli was there. So, then I shared it on Facebook, and Marco Bellinelli, then a member of the Chicago Bulls, said thank you. So, aka the person running his social media account, said thank you. So, what?
There you go.
I always remember Marco Bellinelli as a Bull. So, okay. Let's never talk about Marco Bellinelli again in this conversation because he didn't do great in the playoffs. He did really bad. Right. That's fine. He got him there in the regular season. Yeah. Playoff-wise, Duncan performed slightly better with 3.2 win shares, 16.3 points per game, 9.2 rebounds per game. Kawhi is right there with him, though, at 2.9 win shares and 14.3 points per game. Manu Ginobili does step up playoff-wise. He averages 14.3 points per game, 2.2 win shares. Tiago Splitter somehow, some way, was third on the team in win shares in the playoffs. Wild to insane at 2.6. So this one is tough. It's probably Kawhi Leonard, though Duncan makes an incredibly compelling case. Having watched these games, though, and known what Kawhi Leonard was doing in these games, which was just everything. He was doing this. He was rebounding. He was defending LeBron, defending Dwayne Wade, defending everybody. I mean, he had to carry and shoulder such a huge load in these playoffs. And again, with the benefit of hindsight, we kind of knew what Kawhi would be. You know, now we know what Kawhi is going to be. At this time, we didn't. But I think at the end of these finals, we did kind of understand what Kawhi was going to be and what he was. So to me, this is Kawhi Leonard. I think the stats kind of back that up. The play on the court backs that up. Good case for Duncan. Really, really good case for Duncan. But I think this one has to go to Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, in the playoffs, Kawhi was scoring 14.3 points per game and 6.7 rebounds. Like, I mean, just to show you what the collective effort was for the Spurs. And you're right, you know, Duncan obviously plays really well. They get, you know, Tiago Splitter, you know, guys who were good players but not special players step up and are big. You know, Manu is another great playoffs. This was definitely a collective effort, but I do agree. You got to pick somebody. I think Kawhi is probably the best choice here, given the spark that he had. That defense on LeBron was really important. And you're right. Yeah, this was kind of his, he wasn't a superstar yet. He wasn't producing like a superstar yet, but that would come very soon after this. And, you know, this kind of kicked it off. Obviously wins that finals MVP. Yeah. I agree with you on Kawhi.
Yeah, and again, benefit of hindsight, it's obviously Kawhi. I think at the time, too, if you remember the conversations immediately following these playoffs, it was like, oh, Kawhi's a dude. Like, this is a guy. Like, 2013, he kind of got exposed as not being quite ready yet, not quite being ready for the spotlight, not being quite ready for all that sort of stuff. And then 2014, he kind of proved, no, I'm ready for the spotlight, and I'm going to just – he more than anybody, I think, willed this team to victory in 2014. One of the best, back-to-back NBA Finals seasons of all time, the Spurs and the Heat. Going neck to neck in 2013 and 2014. But yeah, this one's to me pretty easily Kawhi.
Yeah, I would agree. All right. 2017 and 2018 Warriors. Do we go with Steph? Do we go with Kevin Durant? Do we go Zaza Pachulia? Who knows? So, yeah, 2017, man, this is, you know, they're both neck and neck, but this is definitely neck and neck. So, win shares in the regular season, 12.6 for Curry, 12 for Durant. In the playoffs, 3.4 for Curry, 3.1 for Durant. All the other advanced metrics, and honestly, like just regular, you know, scoring average. Curry in the regular season, 25.3 to 25.1 for Durant. In the playoffs, 28.1 for Curry, 28.5 for Durant. So in pretty much every metric you can measure here, advanced or otherwise, very, very close. Durant was a little bit stronger in the regular season. He does miss 20 games because of injury in the regular season. Again, I don't know how that matters. How much it really should matter. I mean, you could argue that Curry had the better and more productive season, but was he the better player at the time? Well, there's only certain ways to measure that. For what it's worth, they were both second team All-NBA. Yeah, this is tough. I'm not going to reach a conclusion. I'm going to talk about 2018 first, and then we'll reach a conclusion for both. On there, but any other thoughts on the 2017 season in particular?
Yeah, it's a strange Warriors year. I mean, obviously it was pretty easy for them. It was just like, oh wait, we're good, and now we have Durant, so now we're really really good. And yeah, I think guys are neck and neck at this time. And I think it was kind of this weird feeling out process of, hey, who's the guy on this team? And it was very split at this time. I really do think that you could flip a coin for either of these guys. The numbers kind of bear that out as well, almost exactly the same numbers. Durant was like crazy efficient that year though, and just so good from all parts of the court. So yeah, it's a tough one, but no, we'll get to it with both, because I think we can wrap it up in one neat little package when we talk about 2018.
Yes, 2018, honestly, pretty much the opposite. Curry performs a little bit better in the regular season. He's got a better PER, better box score plus minus, but he misses 31 games. So and Durant missed 13 games, so, or 14 games. So they both had injuries. Durant was first team All-NBA. Curry was third team. You know, in the playoffs, Durant did play a bit better. Curry missed several, you know, playoff games, but only played 14 of the 21 playoff games. So, yeah, and I would say that Durant overall did perform just slightly better in most respects than Durant. But again, really, really close. They both averaged 26.4 points in the regular season. You know, Durant is 29 points, Curry is 25 points. You know, efficiency wise, they're both pretty similar, honestly. You know, I again, a difficult thing to parse out. I'm going to have a cop out here. I'm going to say Curry in 2017, Durant in 2018. Just, hey, availability is a skill, right? You know, they were there for, you know, basically the whole time. You know, they stepped up when the other guy was, you know, injured, was out, which I guess that's important. I mean, you know, they were playing at their best at that point. They were stepping up. They were keeping them ahead. So, you know, without really, we obviously both watched it. We both know they were really, you know, basically equally important to them being at championship level. Obviously, they were champion before Durant came along, and they've, you know, won a championship since then. But I mean, Durant was, you know, so important to what they do, and made it so much easier on everybody else as well, that, you know, you can't say that he wasn't incredibly valuable and just about as valuable as Steph was during that time as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely forgot that they had these injuries during these seasons. I just remember them like always playing and just like always being great. And like, yeah, but again, they probably could afford them where he's like, you know what? I'll just take like 10 more games off, cause I don't need to be there. Cause Kevin Durant's there. Kevin Durant being like, I don't really need to be there, cause Steph Curry's there. So yeah, I don't really, I know they miss these games, cause I'm looking at the numbers, I'm seeing them happen. I just do not remember that happening whatsoever. But
yeah,
I think exactly, they were so close that I think you have to just include, hey, this guy played the full season this year and this guy played the full season last year, but you can really coin flip either of these guys. They were in almost every single way equals in the playoffs and in the regular season to help these teams win the titles. So
sure. In 2017, I mean, they won 67 games. They swept the first three rounds and they beat the Cavs 4-1 in the finals. You know, 2018 was more of a struggle. They, they won only 58 games. You know, their SRS was only like third in the league. So they were obviously a good team, but they weren't a dominant regular season team. You know, they almost lose to the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals. They were down, you know, they were down 3-2, and they managed to rally. Only, you know, the Houston just forgot how to shoot threes in Game 7, or else, you know, that might have changed things.
So what should we do? I don't know. Take more threes? We haven't made one in 28 attempts. I don't know. Take eight more and see what happens.
See what happens, yeah. But we can't miss this many, can we? Yeah,
we can't miss 30 in a row. That's ridiculous.
They did sweep the finals against the Cavs again, but I mean, the Cavs were also, you know,
that Cavs team, the better. The NBA Finals ended when the Houston Rockets were eliminated. So
right, exactly. Yes. So
yeah, that finals. Let's just
Remember that? Right. Well, LeBron had like a 50-point triple double in the first game, and then that J.R. Smith, that game point. That was crazy. Anyway.
Oh, those Cavs teams. People do not give enough credit for LeBron dragging those hapless...
That last year, especially.
Especially that team. Dummies and idiots and has-beens.
Their second best player was J.R. Smith.
who didn't know anything that was going on in the game at that point. But it was good. I like J.R. Smith. Anyway, 2020 Lakers, let's go to them. Hey, LeBron, he's back again.
Speaking of J.R. Smith,
I forgot he was on. 2020. This was another team of has-beens and whatnots and all these people. But hey, he also had Anthony Davis, and that helped a lot. So now we have the 2020 Lakers. Who is the best between Anthony Davis and LeBron? So I think it's a pretty solid bait, and it's pretty juicy. So obviously we have a super, super, super weird season broken up by the pandemic and a bubble playoffs or whatever. But Anthony Davis does play 62 games that year. LeBron plays 67. So we're close in terms of those two guys' games played. Davis performs better than LeBron in the regular season, getting 11.1 win shares, averaging a team-high 26.1 points, and grabbing 9.3 rebounds. Now, LeBron... he's LeBron. 25.3 points per game, 10.2 assists per game, 7.8 rebounds per game, 9.8 win shares. On regular season alone, you probably give it to Davis. In the playoffs, though, it becomes a different story. LeBron is super, super close in everything. Davis still has the point per game lead, but only by 0.01 point per game. Davis's line is 27.7 points per game, 9.7 rebounds per game, and 3.5 assists per game for 4.5 win shares. LeBron, though, very nearly averages a triple-double in the finals, 27.6 points per game, 10.8 rebounds per game, and 8.8 assists per game for a 4.3 win shares. LeBron wins finals MVP, and it's kind of hard to argue with. I think I'm going with LeBron here on the merits of it being LeBron, him very clearly being the engine that made the team go. And to me, Davis clearly benefiting from LeBron being his teammate. Now, obviously, LeBron benefited greatly from Anthony Davis being his teammate. That's how that works. When you have two good players, they benefit from each other. It's very, very close. I can hear an argument for Davis, but for me, I got to go with LeBron here.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. Again, without the absence of stronger evidence in front of for AD, I got to go with LeBron because, you know, it's either close or in favor of LeBron. You know, it's close enough that there's no compelling reason to give it to AD. I mean, you know, he played really well in those playoffs and in those finals, and he hit that huge shot in against Denver in the earlier in the playoffs to that game winner. So he did some great stuff long and was really important for that playoff run. But yeah, it's LeBron. You know, it's hard to argue against LeBron again without stronger evidence. Just got to go with LeBron by default.
Yeah, and there was games where it felt like Davis was kind of leading them, and it did feel like, hey, this is – but a lot of that was like, hey, Anthony Davis finally figured out how to use his body, and hey, Anthony Davis finally figured out how to be great and be that sort of stuff. And then, like, while all that's happening, LeBron is just being LeBron in the background and just being absolutely, absolutely incredible. So, I go with LeBron here.
He has the ball in his hand so much more, doing all that stuff.
Yeah, he's just doing everything really on the court. Right. Again, if you want to make a case for Davis, I think a case could be made, but for me, I think it's LeBron.
Exactly. So, all right. So that is it. We have gotten through all however many years of NBA, ABA history, however
all of
many
them.
We have. Yeah. Did it all. Right. We did it all. Yeah. NBL, ABA, everything. So, all right. So who has been the best, the most? So we've counted the people who have won multiple times, been the best player on a championship team. So Bill Russell did it 8 times. George Mikan did it 7 times. Michael Jordan did it 6 times. Magic Johnson and LeBron James both did it 4 times. Steph Curry, Larry Bird, John Havlicek, Shaquille O'Neal, and Tim Duncan all did it 3 times. And Julius Erving, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Kobe Bryant, Wilt Chamberlain, Hakeem Olajuwon, and Kawhi Leonard all did it twice. So there have been 49 players who we believe can say that they were the best player on a championship team from the 89 championship teams that we considered between the NBA, ABA, BAA, and NBL.
There it is.
That's it. Yeah.
So officially, Bill Russell, your greatest of all time. There you go.
Officially, yeah, that's it.
Number two, George Mikan. We're just going to go. This is the official that's now the yeah. official list of the top players of all time. Bill Russell, George Mikan, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, LeBron James, Steph Curry. There's your top five, and then we're no more debates. So
yeah,
oh, fair enough. That was top six. Sorry, that was
six. Top six. Yeah,
so
it's all right.
Steph Curry, you're out of there, pal. Top five, I just gave it all to you there. Lock it in. It's set in stone forever. But that's pretty. I mean that. When you look at that list, that's, I mean, not maybe the order of it, but, like, those are the dudes, you know what I mean? That's, like, Havlicek
the worst list ever.
People would, like, brush up against, but Bill Russell, George Mikan, MJ, Magic, LeBron, Steph, Bird.
Curry, Shaq.
Dr. Duncan. J, Tim Duncan, Kareem, Kobe, Wilt, Hakeem.
Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard.
Maybe not Kawhi Leonard, but, I mean, I mean, most of those guys, I would say, you know, you could make a top 10 case for, you know, almost all those guys.
Right.
Except probably Havlicek and Kawhi, maybe Kawhi could get there. So that's a pretty good list. So
if Kawhi decides to play again, which I don't know, maybe. Hey
maybe
Kawhi, what's your injury? I don't know. All right, no problem. Whenever you're ready, pal.
It sucks to hurt. Yeah. All right.
Like, my man takes 2 years off for an ACL, but hey, it's fine.
Yeah. Hey.
But then he comes back and wins the title, so it's like, oh, shit.
Sure. All right. Like, I guess. Why not?
It works. But, this is fun. I enjoyed doing this. We did it. We're done.
Yeah, hopefully everyone, Doug, this was a lot of fun to do. You know, of course, you know, feel free to yell at us nicely on social media. We are on Twitter and Facebook at OverBackNBA. You know, you're into what we're doing, wherever you listen to us, please leave a rating and review. So, it just makes us feel better and helps, other listeners perhaps, you know, discover the show and, learn about, NBA history themselves. So hopefully everyone dug this. It's been a great doing another show. Rich, thanks very much. Appreciate, all your hard work on this. And thanks everyone for listening. We're back again soon.